Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
There has been a lot said about Sinead over the last few days, but let's talk about her for a little while now. Andrea Carr, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan. Good morning.
Hi, Andrea. There's been a lot said over the last few days, but fundamentally, it's very sad about Sinead, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terribly sad. I mean, I think I'm not alone in being kind of heartbroken by it. She was just an amazing woman, singer, artist. And, I had the height of respect for her and everything about her. She was so fearless. When she sang, once she sang a song, she occupied it so intensely. I found it, arresting to listen to her. And, her honesty was so vivid in everything she did. And, it's a huge loss. And I feel obviously so, so sad and sorry for her children and those that love her and that are mourning her now.
You probably remember, you would have been like, she was that bit ahead of you in things. But you were probably just a kid coming into your teenage years when Sinead first burst on the scene. Do you remember when you first heard or became aware of her?
Absolutely. I mean, I adored The Lion and the Cobra. I still do.
Yeah.
And Troy particularly, I played. I scratched that record a lot. My goodness. I mean, how could you not be, taken by her?
Yeah.
And and obviously then her singing and the video, Nothing Compares to You. You know, again, it is that kind of honesty that's just... it's almost uncomfortable nearly because it's so intensely emotional and true. And I feel that I don't know, when you think about songs and you say, there's that phrase, sing it like you mean it. There was no other way for her in every way in her life. Please God, she's at peace now and the end of her suffering is, and she's reunited with her beloved son in another realm.
Andrea, did you ever work with her?
You know what? I was so fortunate to, she sang, I made a solo record of covers. It was called Lifelines. And I did a cover of Tinsel Town in the Rain. The Blue Nile song, and John Reynolds produced the record, and she sang at the end of it with me, which is amazing. Now, I wasn't there at the time when she was singing it, but I obviously wrote to her thanks, and I'm very I love it. And then another point, we did Here's to You, Ronnie Drew. Do you remember when that song? So we were all there together at the Late at that time, and we had moments together over the years as artists and everything, but I didn't personally know her. I feel I'm the same as most, as just a big fan.
Yeah. Stay with us, Andrea. Phil Coulter is with us too. And Phil, you produced Universal Mother, one of Sinead O'Connor's finest albums. Phil, I'm just thinking about Andrea, about Sinead, about Dolores O'Riordan, and they were pop stars. They had huge commercial success, but the music and their voices as Irish female singers seem to come from somewhere deeper than your usual pop singer. Is that a kind of a soul that's common in Irish musicians, maybe, Phil?
Well, possibly, Brandon, but it's for sure that with Sinead it was exceptional. I mean, just the impact around the world on Sinead's passing tells you of the impression that she made and what she left behind. I can't remember another Irish singer who created this sort of reaction on passing. Sinead was unique. I consider myself very fortunate as a songwriter that Sinead, who was very choosy about the songs that she sang, that she chose to sing two of my songs. That's something that I'm immensely proud of. And as Andrea said there a little while ago, when Sinead sang one of your songs, I mean, she just really did inhabit the song. For a songwriter, it's a dream when you have someone like Sinead O'Connor breathing life into your words and into your music. I'll never forget when we recorded Scorn Not His Simplicity. In the middle of the album, we sent everybody home, and there was just nobody in the studio but Sinead, myself, and the engineer, and we dimmed the lights. Sinead was in the vocal booth. I was sitting at the grand piano. We had an eye line to each other. We just ran the track to establish the routine and the keys, etc. Then we did a take. And when she finished singing the song, she stood where she was. I sat where I was, letting the music die off. And the engineer had got the wit not to speak, not to mood, because in that silence, it was as if all of us in that room realized that something very special had just happened. It was a moment, Brendan, that doesn't happen in recording studios too often, but that was the power of Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah, and maybe just to explain to people, Phil, that Scorn Not His Simplicity is probably the most personal song you ever wrote, and it was about coming to terms with your son who was born with Down syndrome. And of course, Sinead had an aunt who had Down syndrome, who had kind of had been a big part in introducing Sinead to music as a kid, and she was very close to her, and she talked about her a lot.
Yep.
And that was a song, like even Lou Kelly, who sang it originally, he would only sing it on special occasions because he felt it was such a delicate, personal, special song, wouldn't he?
100%, Brent. I mean, how fortunate am I to have a song recorded by two of the greatest voices this country ever produced, Luke and Sinead. But Sinead's empathy was exceptional. Some years after Universal Mother, I was recording an album of my own called Lake of Shadows, which was inspired by Lough Swilly up in Donegal. And one of the songs that I wrote was a song called The Shores of the Swilly, which was a kind of lament for my young sister who had drowned in the Swilly. Again, very personal and very intense. When I was writing the song, there was only one voice that I heard in my head as I was working with the words and the music. I finished the song. I did a quick demo on the piano and sent it to Sinead, because that was I knew that she was the only one who could do the song justice. 2 or 3 weeks went by and I heard nothing. Then I called Sinead and I said, Sinead, you got the song. I did, Phil. Do you not like it? I love it, she said. But she said, I couldn't sing that song. She said, I'd be crying by the end of the first verse. That's the kind of fragility, that's the kind of sensitivity that Sinead had. And that's the great contrast, Brendan. You know, she was a warrior, of course. We knew she was a warrior. But there was a fragility to her. There was a tenderness to her, a sensitivity to her, that most people would not have been aware of.
And that time, so you produced Universal Mother, which would have been just after Am I Not Your Girl. It was at that point really where Sinead had kind of walked away from superstardom. How did she come together at that point, and where was she at in her life and her career and her attitudes to music and to the pop industry?
Good question. I'm often asked that. I would have not been, to most people, not an obvious choice as a producer for Sinead O'Connor. But it tells you a lot about Sinead, that she didn't care what people thought of Phil Coulter, Tranquility, all that stuff. Sinead, you know, Sinead made the choice because she felt that she could trust me. And I'll tell you the story. I was producing with Van Morrison an album called No Prima Donna, where we had a list of guest performers that ran from, Elvis Costello to Liam Neeson. And Sinead was one of the nominated singers. And they were coming in one at a time to do their voice. I had laid most of the tracks. And on this particular evening when Sinead came into Windmill Lane Studios, I'm up in the control room alongside Van, Michelle Rocca, Marianne Faithfull, Derek Bell of the Chieftains, and a few other notables. And Sinead comes in at the appointed time. I look down and I see Sinead come into the studio, stop and look up at the control room. And at that moment, do you know what happened, Brendan? Someone kicked in with me as a father. Now, I have a bunch of daughters. So I just felt that kind of instinct. I looked down and I didn't see Sinead O'Connor, the warrior. I saw this girl who was kind of intimidated by looking up at this room full of heavyweights. So I did two things. I chased Van and that crew out of the control room, and I went down to Sinead, and I gave her a hug. And I said, Sinead, forget about all that, gang. You and I are going to work on this. It's going to be grand. I'm going to look after you. It's going to be great. And that was our connection. So he asked me, how did I come to produce the album? Within weeks, we had started working with Universal Mother. Why? Because she saw in Phil Coulter somebody she could trust. I was a kind of senior citizen about the place, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that's what she needed, Brandy. She needed somebody that, A, she could trust. And so it's one of my, I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that Sinead recorded two of my songs. I'm privileged that I produced one of her albums, but I'm also, as a father, as a human being, I'm also very, very content that for that period when we worked together, she felt safe and she felt under my wing.
Yeah.
Because up until then, this was the thing.
Can I just bring you in there, Andrea? The fame was very corrosive to Sinead, wasn't it? But I always think that, like, musicians and artists like she was and like you are, I think a lot of the time you are quite sensitive, introspective people, and then you get hit with this weird thing, this huge exposure and this fame treadmill. You probably understand why it was hard for her, and that kind of thing is draining, is it, Andrea?
Well, I think for her, probably more than anybody, because she didn't seem to pretend. She didn't, even though she was a singer and in this world, this business of, you know, smoke and mirrors and music, she didn't seem capable of pretending. It was all honest.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, I mean, it is, I suppose, the capability to pretend, to move into a role and then move out of it is in a way your armor, I think, to what is corrosive in that world.
So you have to be able to protect yourself in a way
by
playing the game to some extent.
Well, I just feel by having, I suppose, a personality that it is out there, but one that is also private and is you as a girl and is you, you know what I mean? That is safe and yours and not, you know, not for public consumption. You know, and I think that it felt like all of it was for public consumption, and it's not, you know, I do feel as exactly what Phil said there was that though she was a warrior, there was an incredible vulnerability about her.
Yeah.
You know, and you sense it when you met her, you know.
And do you empathize with that pressure that she felt as well as a woman in the business at that time, that it's like, look a certain way, be nice, play the game, all that kind of thing? Like, was there that pressure more on women?
Oh, I'd say absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I absolutely empathize with it, but I feel, you know, there's no doubt she fought against it much more than I did. So I feel where she absolutely rejected it in every way.
Yeah, which was a hard road to choose, I suppose, was it?
Again, I'd say it's the only role she could choose.
Yes, yes.
But being her, but I suppose a hard road to choose. But I think all of us women are grateful for it. You know, that she did.
Yeah.
She just was so authentic, you know, and not one bit of her was a pretense.
What was it about her voice, Andrea?
Yeah, again, it's just her life and her essence seems so vivid in the voice.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that honesty, and it is arresting. It is almost painful. You know, when she sings The Thief of Your Heart and all of that, it's so beautiful. And, you know, it's kind of thing when it's a movie, at the end of a movie, if she sings and you usually would stop, you just can't stop. You're still sitting there, you know, listening. Just again, that honesty, I suppose. And it was never about, again, to me, what I always think about singing, it's not about what you can do with your voice. It's about the story that you're telling, and the voice is you know, secondary. And with her, that was always it. It was the story she was telling. It was absolutely truthful.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, that's it. And that there, in a word, is great art, isn't it? Truth and honesty and everything else. And look, she paid the price in her life for it. But I don't, you know, I don't think that her life was all unhappiness and suffering either, which you could think after the last few days. Like, I think in many ways she reveled in her gift, and she reveled in the trouble she caused, didn't she?
I think so. Yeah, I read a quote, something about troublemaking or whatever. But, you know, I do also, I remember when we all, like a lot of the Irish artists were in RTE for this Here's You, Money Drew, and or even when we went in to record it, she was really quite excited about all of us being together, yeah, you know, and yeah, quite giddy, you know, there was good mischief in her eyes and kind of, it's great, we're all together and we must do more. And, you know, it was really, you know, very girlish, though, again, very, very, you know, not what you'd expect of somebody, yeah, of what she'd made of herself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Andrea Corr, thank you. That was a lovely tribute. And Phil Coulter, thank you very much as well. And you know what we might do now? Actually, I think we have it there. We'll have a little listen to this. Is Scorn Not His Simplicity, and this is Sinead O'Connor singing it. Phil, Andrea, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Brendan.
See the child with the golden hair, yet eyes that show the emptiness inside. Do we know? Can we understand just how he feels, or have we really tried? See him now as he stands alone, watches children play a children's game. Simple child, he looks almost like the others, yet they know he's not the same. Scorn not his simplicity, but rather try to love him. Oh no, oh no.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.